Podcast Episode Number 5.
Hey everyone, welcome to Tokyo Podcast. On this show, I'm going to be talking about the new iPhone 4S that was released in Japan and my visit to a Thai Japanese festival. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I am your host, Tony Joe. And the big news in Tokyo this week actually is the, two big news stories. The release of the new iPhone 4S that was unfortunately overshadowed by the death of Steve Jobs. I'm not going to go too much into Steve Jobs on this show because I already talked about that on my last show. But needless to say, a huge loss for the Apple and tech communities. Anyways, I went down to the SoftBank store to try to figure out what documents I need to get the iPhone 4S. As with everything in Japan, you need a lot of documentation to do anything here. And so I kind of looked online on their websites and I couldn't quite figure out what the procedure is and what their plans are that they offered. The phone companies and phone situation here in Japan is quite a bit different than obviously in Thailand and even back home in Canada, in that they still follow the, in my opinion, quite an antiquated system of locking your phone to the carrier. So all the phones here are sold SIM locked, whereas the rest of the world have moved on and realized that it's better to sell them unlocked. I noticed even in the US that Apple's now starting to offer unlocked phones, but here in Japan, their mobile technology is years ahead and years behind at the same time. So I went down to the iPhone store. I went down to SoftBank to check out what the deal was on getting the iPhone 4. And as soon as I got there, I saw a huge lineup for people waiting to pre-order the iPhone. And luckily, I found a very cute Japanese girl who actually lived in my hometown of Vancouver, who spoke excellent English, who walked me through the whole procedure, saving me from having to spend an hour in line. And what I kind of found out is, as with everything in Japan, you need a lot of documents. I need this thing called the alien registration card, which I don't have yet. I need my passport. I need a credit card. I need a health insurance card. All this documentation just to get a phone. Now compare that to Bangkok, where you can go to MBK and buy a phone in 5 minutes. All you need to do is hand them some money. But here in Japan, I have to go to all these other agencies, get all this other documentation, and then come back. And interestingly, depending on the type of visa I have will determine whether I can even buy the phone or not. Here in Japan, many of these phones are sold subsidized by the carrier. So as I understand it, you can get the iPhone 4S, the 16 gigabyte model, for free if you subsidize the payments over 24 months. So if you sign a 2-year contract, essentially, you get the phone for free, and you just basically end up paying a higher amount every month until you pay the phone off over a 2-year period. However, depending on your visa, they may not even give you that option. If your visa is less than 2 years, they may not give you that option of subsidizing the phone. So if you don't want to subsidize it, you can purchase the phone outright. And then I guess your monthly payments are just a little bit lower. However, what kind of sucks about both of these situations are that if you buy this phone outright, it's still, as I understand, it's still SIM locked to Japan. Now, there was some confusion last year in regards to the iPad, whether the iPad was going to be SIM locked to Japan or not. And some people emailed Steve about it, and his response was that they're not, but then on the SoftBank website it indicated that it was. And so I'm not quite sure what the deal is with the iPad, and it seemed like many other people weren't quite sure either. And I'm not quite sure what the deal with the iPhone 4S is. Apple talked about that it being a global phone, that you could use it on any network. However, perhaps that means it has to be first unlocked. I don't know. It would kind of suck to buy this phone in Japan, it being a global phone, and only being able to use it in Japan. So that's something I still have to kind of figure out. But But the big news in regards to the iPhone or the Japanese phone industry is that another carrier called KDDI is now able to carry the iPhone. For up until actually, you know, just last week, the only carrier that carried the iPhone was a company called SoftBank. And for whatever reason, Apple never really opened it up to other markets until recently. And so this new company called KDDI, which uses the CDMA technology, is now allowed to carry the iPhone. And it seems like many people online are quite excited about this new company. One of the reasons is that SoftBank doesn't have the greatest reputation here in Japan for reception. I guess they're kind of like the AT&T of Japan. their service hasn't been that great. And they're actually the number three carrier here in Japan. Number one is Docomo, number two is KDDI, and number three is SoftBank. So they're the smallest, and apparently they have the worst reception. So many people are obviously very excited at the opportunity to get an iPhone and use it on a better network. Now, the thing that people have to think about is which is better for them, GSM, which is SoftBank, or CDMA, which is KDDI. I haven't figured that out yet, but that's something I will have to figure out before I get my phone. The pricing for both of these, I think many people are excited about, you know, the prospect of using it on a better network, but also the potential for a pricing war or competition, let's say. It seems like both companies now are aggressively trying to woo customers. I noticed that KDDI is offering like 10,000 yen, which is $120 cash rebate if you switch your number from SoftBank. So it looks like this new competition will be a good thing for prices and for Japanese consumers. To help us figure out the Japanese mobile market, next week I will be joined by a special guest, Mr. Paul Papadimitrio, who runs a website called mobileinjapan.com. And he covers all aspects of telephones and mobile service in Japan. And he is right on top of what's going on between KDDI and SoftBank. So he's going to come on next week and talk to me about which company that he thinks is better, the pricing structure that both companies have released, and overall what he thinks about the Japanese mobile market and how the iPhone plays into it and what this new competition means. So that should be very exciting. I am looking forward to talking to him so I can figure out exactly what phone and what network, and more importantly, what documents I need to get my iPhone 4S. The other interesting piece of news this week is that the Japan Tourism Agency has come up with a plan to try to boost tourism. As you know, after the earthquake, tourism in Japan has really suffered. And the tourism agencies and whatnot are trying all sorts of ways to try to boost tourism. It's interesting to me, though, is that this is an area where I think the Japanese could really learn from Thailand, is that I don't really see Japan being an easy tourist destination. It's hard physically to get to. It's an island in the middle of the ocean. You gotta fly to it. But even when you get here, there's not that much English available. I mean, the Japanese are certainly helpful and polite, but definitely it's easier to be a tourist, I think, in Bangkok. Japan really is a country that is built 100% for the Japanese. And so there's very little in the way of information or services for foreigners. So I think being a tourist here, Japan, I mean, it's obviously great that they're trying to boost tourism, try to get more tourists to come here. But I also feel that they need to work on a little bit on improving the tourist infrastructure and services available here in Japan. Now, having said that, I really do think that Japan is an interesting country for many people to visit. Part of the reason why is because the Japanese culture is so completely different than any other country in the world. And you know, it's not just all anime and temples and sushi and all that kind of stuff. There's really a lot more to this country than those kind of main things that people always think about. And what I really like about Japan is that each area is kind of unique. especially is food. When I was going to move here, I was talking to my Japanese friends in Bangkok about what areas I wanted to live in, and I didn't really know where I wanted to live. I didn't know if I wanted to live in Tokyo or Osaka area. I even thought about moving to Hokkaido, which is the North Island. And what's really funny to me is I'd ask my Japanese friends about that area, you know, what's it like? And I'm expecting them to tell me what the infrastructure is like, what the transportation is like, what the housing is like. But no, they would only talk about the food. They say, oh, you got to go to Hokkaido because they got this really good stuff here. And if you go to Osaka, that's really known for these kind of noodles and all this stuff. So it's really funny to me that they concentrate on the food. So I really think Japan is a good destination to explore and get out of Tokyo and get out of Kyoto. Those are the kind of two main areas that everyone goes to see the temples. And I'll be honest with you, the temples aren't really that exciting to me. Most of them have been rebuilt after the 1950s anyways. So not really that old. They're super clean because it's Japan and everything is clean. I mean, the temples are kind of nice to look at, but to me, they have this kind of sterile, kind of almost, how do you say it? Just like a hospital-ish feel to them because they're just so clean and organized. You know, I expect an old Edo-style temple to be kind of run down and look old, but the temples that, my experience, the ones that I visited, the main tourist ones, they look so new that you just don't get any sense of this old feeling about them. But what's really cool is walking around Tokyo, you can find really old temples and these little shrines kind of tucked away all over the place. And that gives you more of a sense of the kind of the history. But anyways, I really recommend people coming to Japan because I do think it's a fascinating country to visit. Get out of Tokyo. You can buy a Japanese rail pass from outside of Japan that allows you to travel all over Japan. You can only buy it from outside of Japan. It's like the Euro rail pass in Europe. So, and it's a really good deal. So I would definitely encourage people to come to Japan. And anyways, this Japan Tourist Agency is planning to offer 10,000 free visits to Japan to bloggers in an effort to boost tourism here. So I don't know all the details yet. As soon as I do, I'll let you know. But what it is they want 10,000 people with you know, decent blogs and good writing skills and good photography skills and all that to come to Japan for free. They'll pay for your airline, and they want you to write about your experience and hopefully write about the positive aspects of your experience and to try to encourage more people to come to Japan. So I think this is a really good thing, and as soon as I know more details about it, I will let you know. So last weekend, there was a Japanese Thai festival held at the famous Yasukuni Shrine. The Yasukuni Shrine, as you know, is a bit controversial because there are some war criminals that are buried there. But it's actually a really nice shrine. I really like that area. But there was a Thai-Japanese festival happening at the Yasukuni Shrine that I went to check out. And it was very interesting. It was so Japanese in its organization and so not Thai in so many ways. But it was actually quite a large festival. It was larger than I thought it would be. There was, you know, dozens and dozens of booths that were set up. They had a big stage set up where they did demonstrations of Muay Thai and Thai dance and all this kind of stuff. And but the really cool thing is they had lots of Thai food booths set up. So you could buy everything from durian to, I didn't think any somtam, but pad thai and all sorts of different kinds of Thai food. It was really funny though to see everyone lined up so neat and orderly for all the food. I mean, you would never see that in Thailand, but here in Japan, everybody's lined up patiently to try all the different kinds of food. And it was really, really good. I mean, they had like some of the more popular ones with the Japanese were the Thai desserts. I really think Thai desserts are quite popular over here because I know Japanese people tend to like sweet food. You see a lot of candy and sweets for sale here. So the Thai desserts, like they had like mango drink, like fruit shake drinks were really popular. They had all this fruit that were brought in, like they had that rambutan fruit. It's the fruit that my good friend Flukster and I joke look like a hairy farang. They had durian, of course, but no one was actually buying the durian. they had the dragon fruit, which was really popular, and a mango and all that other kind of stuff. So it was a really good festival. I think that Japan and Thailand enjoy a very good relationship, probably better than many other Asian countries that are neighbors of Japan. I think maybe perhaps the Japanese people here don't quite realize what a good relationship these two countries have. But it was a really good festival. You could see a lot of Thai people come out, and they were loving it. I gotta say though, the food that we tried wasn't really Thai food. The pad Thai that I ate was the most bland tasting pad Thai I think I've ever had in my life. And at 200 baht, probably the most expensive as well. But it was really good to see everybody come out. I think the Japanese people really enjoy sampling foods and from different countries and seeing other cultures, because there was a lot more Japanese people there than I thought. There was more Japanese than Thai. I kind of expected to see more Thai people, but there wasn't that many Thai people. But it was a really good festival. And apparently there's another one that's going to be happening, I think, next April as well. So when that happens, I'll let you know. But if you are in Japan, if you're a Thai person, I definitely would recommend checking these things out. The food won't be the same, but as with anything Thai and festivals, it's always a lot of fun. Lastly, I wanted to give everyone a quick update on my housing situation. Getting an apartment, like I said many times, getting an apartment in Bangkok is so easy. You can get it within like a day. You know, just find a place, give the landlord some money, and you got a fully furnished place, you know, right away. Here in Japan, it seems to be a rather lengthy process. You know, I've talked about all the paperwork that's required and all that. So what I'm going to talk about this time briefly is getting furniture. And as you know, when you rent an apartment in Japan, most of the time it comes unfurnished. Now, you can rent furnished apartments here, but they are really expensive. So most of the apartments that you're going to rent are completely unfurnished. So where are you going to find furniture? How are you going to transport it? That's another thing you got to think about. In Bangkok, it's so easy. If you need to buy furniture, just go to the, you know, local furniture store and hop in a taxi and go home. But here, you can't do that. As I found out when I took a 25-minute taxi ride, and it cost me over 6,000 yen, which is 2,500 baht. So taxis are not really an option here. So where do you find furniture? Well, actually, I found two sources of furniture that are really good. One of them is Craigslist. And for those of you who don't know, Craigslist is like a classified website that was started by a guy, I believe his name is Craig, actually, in the US. And it's a really good place to find all sorts of information of like people selling stuff. And it's just like an online classified bulletin board website. So what I found is that in Japan, there are very costly fees to dispose of your appliances. So you can't just toss it out. If you have some large furniture like a bed or a refrigerator or a table or something like that, it's actually pretty expensive to have the moving company or disposal company come and pick that up. So if you go on Craigslist, you will see many people who are leaving Japan actually quite desperate to get rid of this stuff because they don't want to pay to get rid of it. So I was able to get a fridge, microwave, table, kitchen table, a bunch of chairs, some kitchen dishes, utilities, stuff like that, utensils, and bookshelf, all for free from a lady who was leaving Japan. This is fantastic. This saved me a whole lot of money. So you will find many of these, what they call sayonara sales. Sayonara, of course, is goodbye. Sayonara sales on Craigslist. Now, the thing to think about, though, is I found that these things, you know, not all of them are free, of course. Some people are selling them, but usually at a quite a discounted rate. However, what you have to think about is moving. Because even though this lady was offering all this stuff for me for free, I, of course, still had to pay for the movers to come pick it up from her place and deliver it to my place. And that cost me about $120, about 10,000 yen. But since I got all this stuff for free, it was a great deal for me. However, I have noticed that if you have to pay for the moving costs, over and above what the seller wants for the item, sometimes that can actually be more expensive than purchasing it brand new from the store because many furniture stores offer free delivery service for large items. For example, near my apartment, there is a furniture store called Nitori. And this is quite a well-known brand. They're all over Japan and they sell discounted furniture. And so I went to Nitori to buy like a computer desk and a bed and a few other items. And I was comparing their prices to their prices online. Now their prices were obviously higher, but for some of these large items, they offer free delivery. And what's really good is that if you purchase some large items like a bed and anything large that they offer free delivery, you can then go purchase a bunch of smaller items that they would normally charge for delivery and just have it all delivered for free. So in my experience, I found that sometimes on Craigslist, the price plus the asking price plus the delivery fee was more than what it would have cost me to buy it in the store. And of course, buying it in the store, I get it brand new with a warranty and all that other kind of stuff. So it really does pay to shop around. I've also heard that there are some really good secondhand or recycle stores around Tokyo. Because once again, it's so expensive to get rid of the stuff, it's easier just to leave it with a recycle or secondhand store. And from what I understand, usually many of these items in these secondhand stores are still very good quality and condition. I haven't been able to find any, so I can't confirm that, but it's what I've read online. So if you are coming to Japan and you're looking to buy furniture, I would definitely recommend checking out Craigslist first. There's a surprising amount of stuff being sold on there, and there's a surprising amount of stuff that's available for free as long as you just can pick it up. And I mean, hey, if you got a Japanese driver's license and you have access to a car, I mean, it's even a better deal because then you don't have to pay for shipping at all. But in my experience, the shipping costs range from like 8,000 to around 10,000 yen, which is about $100 to $120. So you have to add that over and above the asking price of the item that you want to buy. Now, before you go ahead and do that, like I said, check out some of the discount furniture stores that are available. The Nitori one is one I mentioned. I believe there's another one called Nissan, something like that. And these stores usually have sales themselves. So definitely pays to shop around here before you start, buying your furniture. And that wraps up another episode of Tokyo Podcast. Don't forget to check out my website at tokyo-podcast.com or visit my Facebook page at facebook.com/Tokyo Podcast. Join me next week when I'll be talking to Mr. Paul Papademetrio from mobileinjapan.com all about cell phones in Japan, the new KDDI and SoftBank competition, the iPhone 4S, and what this means for Japanese consumers. I'm really looking forward to talking to him because I'm really looking forward to getting my iPhone. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.